Hello, and welcome back to Series 2 of the Beautiful Feeling podcast. Here we explore the teachings of Sydney Banks and the understanding known as the Three Principles. I am your host, Rachel Singleton, and in this series, along with my guests, I will be focusing on the area of innate well-being and our experience of health. At the core of our being, we each have within us that which is innately well, joyful, peaceful, and at ease. How do we live in harmony with this? How do we allow this to speak through us and guide us in our daily lives? As always, I recommend that you find a quiet place to listen, allowing the gentle energy of these conversations to bring you into your own well of being. Welcome to today's episode. I am joined by Dr. Dickon Bettinger today, and it's lovely to be having him back on the show. For those of you who don't know, Dickon is a wonderful Three Principles practitioner and mentor, highly renowned. He was one of Sydney Banks' students. He studied with Sydney Banks for 23 years. He was a clinical psychologist for 31 years. And he is deeply involved in the Three Principles community worldwide. What he brings is a wealth of both human and spiritual experience, I feel. When I'm sitting listening to Dickon, or as on this occasion, actually talking to him, I feel myself settle down and quieten. And it's a feeling of sitting in sunlight, you know, something warm and calm and gentle that's reminding me of the good things in life and the truth about human and spiritual reality that we can sometimes lose sight of in the hustle and bustle and mess of everyday life. Dickon is very good at pointing upstream of all that and coming back to how our experience is created and what we are and what we have within us, which is innate well-being. And it's innate well-being that we explore today, what this is and what it means for us, both in sickness and in health. So grab yourself a cuppa, put your feet up, and I hope you like this one. Hello and welcome, Dickon. It is so lovely to have you back on the Beautiful Feeling podcast. Thank you for being with me again.
Always good to be with you, Rachel. This will be fun.
Yeah. So we're kicking off the second series, and the exploration, the journey this time is all about what is innate well-being and our experience of health. So maybe we should start there. What does innate well-being look like to you? What do you understand by that term?
Well, for me, it's very natural. It's before artifact, before anything we've learned. It's always here. So it doesn't come and go. It's always here. You think of, like, in nature, the sun is always there, no matter what the weather is. And I like that. I do. I like that. That it's always here in everybody, and it's natural. We're born with innate well-being, so it's very easy to see babies and young kids being fully present. And especially to see babies and kids before they've developed a conceptualization of life. They're just fully present without the interference of any ideas, beliefs, concepts. And being able to recognize that natural state of full presence without story, artifact, conditioning, learning, You begin to see it everywhere in people. If I followed anybody around, even people with chronic depression, I would see moments when they were fully present because it's so natural. It's the only thing we can't do. It's when there's no seeking, trying, efforting, there's presence. And I think a lot of people are surprised that it's so visible. It's sort of like, go ahead, try and hide your well-being from me. It's impossible. I've had people clinically depressed who in 5 minutes are present and laughing. They say, right now you're not depressed, are you? Oh, yes, I am. Let's talk about this, shall we? I love that any human being of any age, no matter who they are, no matter what their background is, no matter what their personality is, no matter what their conditioning has been in, no matter how many traumas they've suffered, that any human being is capable of dropping into the present moment. And when we drop into the, you can't be thinking and present at the same time. So we have a capacity to transcend for moments our thinking mind. And in those moments, if any of us rest in that space that's there always when we let go of everything. I mean everything. Source of suffering comes from holding on to thought and thinking it's true. But we have experiences of when we're not holding thought, not in belief, not in concepts. And to begin to recognize that that's the direction in which we are able to uncover the well-being that's natural, uncover that inner light so that it can shine through. So that what I see is, I don't care who the person is or what their age is, when they fall out of their thinking, there's a quiet underneath their thinking, a quiet presence, always. It's our true nature. There's a feeling of aliveness. I don't care what mood people are in. I don't care. There's a feeling of alive presence. And since you're not in your conceptual mind, you're not labeling it at that moment. You're just experiencing it, and it feels good. Sometimes only when people go to sleep do they let go of everything they're thinking, and they go, ah. And they think it's the bed that feels so good. But you can get into the same bed and be worrying, and you, believe me, you won't be experiencing, the feeling of complete surrender to our natural state of full presence. That's one way of talking what innate well-being is, full presence. Another way of talking about it is a natural feeling of aliveness and connection with life. Another way of talking about well-being is when our minds are quiet and we're in that feeling of presence, there's a knowing that's available to all human beings that will guide us in those moments toward what's best for us at that moment. Innate wisdom. So you put it all together. That's my current way of thinking about well-being. It's natural. It's available to everybody. Underneath the holding and whole mechanism of conceptualizing, underneath the conceptual mind, there's this quiet, there's this feeling, there's this knowing that's always there in every single human being. It's spiritual. It's built into us. So that's how I see well-being. And so then a lot of what we learn about well-being is how we hold on to thought and why we hold on to thought, when it plain and simply just ends up creating tension, stress, upset, and covers over our well-being. We get out of the way. We don't have to create our well-being like I used to believe. I have to work to develop it. I don't have it, and I got to work to develop it, and I got to do the work. And oh my gosh, Rachel. So anyways, that's my current sense. It's something any human being is already knows about and has experienced, but often hasn't realized that it's innate.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think that last bit that you just kind of pointed to there about doing the work, it's the opposite, isn't it? That's what I see people kind of tripping up over. I know I trip up over that sometimes, you know. I think I need to do something about this if I'm unwell or under the weather or struggling in some way in my life. You know, there's a sense in which some little thing pops up and says, I think you need to do something about this, you know.
Yes, that's right.
And
Well,
it's not that
that's a
easy.
concept, because the conceptual mind can say, I don't feel good. I could feel better. That's another concept. I'm not feeling that now, but I could. But I'm not feeling it now, so it's going to be I'll feel better in the future. So we create time. And then to the ego, the solution is obvious. How do I get from here to there? What do I have to do? So that's the foundation of all self-improvement. And the vast majority of psychological efforts to improve one's well-being are based on assumptions created by the conceptual mind that ultimately are not true. There's nowhere to go. There is no time. This moment is perfect as it is, but for our thinking, saying it isn't, that creates dissatisfaction. And then it creates an imaginary future, and then it creates a steps, the five steps to improvement, the seven steps, the things I have to do, the techniques, the trying, the efforting, the striving, the searching. That's ego. That what's ego? It's when we identify who we are with our, that our concepts are true.
I've been thinking a lot about diagnosis of late. You know, that the way that within a particular culture and a particular medicinal system, we will describe a constellation of sensations and experiences and expressions in the body or in the mind in a particular way. And that terminology can be useful for people. It can reassure them that they're not imagining it, that they're not making it up, that there's support available, that other people have been here before and traveled this road, that there's treatment available. But there's also something about the labeling that can fix it in time and space.
Yeah.
Can fix us in time and space.
No.
So
you
that we
are your
get,
diagnosis.
Yeah. So that it's my autism or my dyslexia or my cancer or my fibromyalgia, and we become identified with the illness itself. And the label has stopped being something to elucidate and has become something we've got caught in, defined by, forgetting that, as you so beautifully just said before, that this present moment is all there is. That this is the gateway between form and formlessness, isn't it? This is the entry point.
A gateway. I like that. Yeah, that's how I'm seeing it now.
And we're sitting in infinite possibility in this moment. The trajectory we will go on is not pre-scripted, is it?
Well, we can think it is.
We sure can.
We can think it is that it's prescripted, or that there's a path towards self-improvement. It's very interesting to realize that realizing one's well-being has nothing to do with self-improvement. It has to wake up to the perfection of this moment as it is. It's nowhere to go and nothing to get. It's already the case. Right? The sun and blue sky are already the case, no matter what the weather is. It's not a matter of creating those things. It's realizing, waking up to, having insight into, I have perfect well-being, and only my think being caught up in and identified with my thinking covers it up. It's very interesting how, I mean, I was for my whole career a licensed psychologist, and when I started psychology in the early 70s, the diagnostic manual was about that big. And every year they added more and more and more and more and more. And then I meet this welder with a ninth grade education who he woke up to what lies beyond the limitations of our conceptual mind. And he suggested there's only one diagnosis for any human being. That every human being has perfect well-being already at core. We're connected to this universal field of intelligence and creativity and aliveness. Everyone already is part of that system. And so every human being has perfect well-being, and at times we get caught up in thought. We think the concept or idea or belief we're caught up in is true. So we hold on to that thought and keep thinking about it. And that holding on to thought keeps us out of the present moment. So it keeps us from accessing well-being. So one problem psychologically for any human being when they're having trouble psychologically is they're holding on to thoughts that they think are true. And that's what suffering is. And when we're not holding, we come back to the present moment. There is no holding. Any thoughts free to come and go, any feelings free to come and go. And in that presence, for no reason, we start feeling better and start having new and fresh thinking and ideas and creativity. Because it's built into us. We already have what we're looking for. That's the cosmic joke. So it's very interesting when I begin to look at myself and my friends and my clients as there's always ever only one problem. And we already have the solution. We are the solution. And there's only one problem is we get caught up in and holding on to beliefs, and we say, well, I'm broken, I'm damaged, I'm stupid, I'm this, I'm that, I'm this diagnosis, that's who I am. So our journey, if you will, in my mind, is to discover the nature of our true self, our true nature, our true nature, that any human being, when they fall out of their identification with thought, drops into a space of presence that's free of concept, alive with the senses and feeling, and wise. And there's the feeling of that is we experience the truth of being connected to all of life, and the ultimate experience of feeling connection to all of life is love. So we fall in love with life, no matter what our circumstances, no matter what's happening, no matter where we are, no matter what mood we're in. We can feel that aliveness and connection to trees, to nature, to each other, to people we like, people we don't like. We can feel a compassion for people who are struggling, caught up innocently. It's our nature. So you could say our nature is freedom, free of thought, free of limitation. Our nature is love, connection, aliveness, and our nature is wise and knowing, a knowing that's not of the intellect.
Yeah.
Innate well-being, our true nature.
Yeah. And I think what's helped me is the realization that everything is this. So if I'm not recognizing something that's coming towards me or coming up in me as that, then something's getting in the way of my seeing. And at the end of last year, I went through an acute illness, which for part of it involved a few days of intense pain, a kind of neuralgic pain up in my head, stabbing pain. And I was aware at the time that it was pretty excruciating. You know, there was this part of me was kind of having that experience. And there was another part of me was completely relaxed about being ill. Now, I used to have a lot of fear about being ill because I was ill for 20 years. So being ill was like a big deal for me. It scared the pants off me. You know, if I started to feel that coming back again. But last year, I didn't see it like that. I saw it as an invitation. I saw it as something to unpack. I saw it as that which I didn't yet understand. I saw it as something that was unfolding, that would be revelatory if I let it be that. And that the only thing I needed to do was to rest back and let it move through and do what it needed to do along the way. And something in that allowed me to have this, at times, a great deal of distance from the pain that was coming through. So that I just kind of felt that the image that I had in my head was that I was opening all of my cells up to take the hit. So it wasn't just here in my head. It was like I just let my whole, all of my cells share that sensation. And it very quickly morphed.
Yeah.
So that what on the one hand was pain and suffering, on the other hand was this almost transcendental and certainly transformational experience of being with whatever was coming, not judging it, not jumping on it, not labeling it, not getting frightened about it, and just seeing what it was, just seeing. Because I didn't know. Who was I to know what this was?
Yeah.
And who was I to know what this would bring? And it's brought teachings that are still ongoing around me wanting to have a quieter life, me wanting to be more settled in my own body, you know, beautiful gifts that have come from it. And there's this sense of, if I was to just term that something from my human mind and categorize that from my human mind, I would not have been able to come to meet the experience and sit in my own well of being and let it come through as it needed to.
I love your openness to what's sort of this contraction that you experience. no longer being a problem, but being an invitation. That's what I'm hearing, is an invitation to get curious about what new and fresh can come through when we're not holding, judging, evaluating the contraction. What new and fresh is right there waiting to be transformative, to be uplifting, to break through. It's a surprise. It's new and fresh. I love that behind the old that we hold on to, there's new and fresh waiting to break through. It's just
I love that too.
Right? Right? And I love your curiosity about, okay, what's coming? What's coming? It's, I know in like Zen Buddhism, they'll talk about moments that are pregnant with possibility. Isn't that beautiful metaphor? I mean, pregnant, ready to give birth to something new and fresh. So all of us can be pregnant with possibilities so that our suffering no longer is a curse. It's an invitation to allow a birthing to happen and be open and curious and see what comes that's not old and conditioned, but new and fresh. It's beautiful. I love how you're, what you're seeing about that is powerful for any of us. We're so conditioned to think that if we feel bad, there's something wrong and we got to get rid of it, rather than it's also created by this deeper intelligence, and that the tension is not a curse to be gotten rid of. It's an invitation saying you're holding on to thought in a way that you're not allowing that light to shine through. And when it does, you'll see the light's always been there, and it will always bring something new and fresh, creative, alive. Before we started talking, about your work as an artist, my wife's work as an artist, and how much after a while, when you become oriented toward being open to new and fresh creation, you start to marvel when you go through a museum or see people doing art, and how the infinite varieties of creation, and that everybody is capable of creating unbelievable things and new and fresh. And we were just in Florence and we went to the Da Vinci Museum, and he had all these inventions that he just came up with. And he invented the automobile, the airplane and flying, the a tank, all kinds of that. This whole museum was featured inventions that are now part of our regular life, but he just came up with them years before they were actually. And you start to think, well, he's a genius. But how powerful it is to realize that every one of us has connection to that. Every one of us is connected to the creative intelligence behind all of life. And that when our minds are open and receptive, I don't care who you are, what age you are, what you've been through, that creative impulse breaks through each of us with something surprising, transformative, new and fresh. That's pretty cool to see people that way.
It is, isn't it?
Pregnant with possibility. You don't, your intellect may go, this is impossible, there is no answer. But to the intelligence of the universe, it knows how to create everything. So there's always an answer. Always, for anything. I can't tell you how often I've worked with people who said, I'm in an impossible situation, and here are my only options. And when they get quiet and tap into that deeper space, they start having tons of ideas that they had never thought of before. So you don't even have to know what to do or how to deal with situations in life. Wisdom knows. You get out of the way, and wisdom is called wisdom because it not only brings us new and fresh, but it brings us what's perfect for us, given the situation we're in, given who we are, given what we're dealing with. It'll bring us exactly what we need in terms of feeling, perceptions, ideas, creativity, responsive. So wisdom is a responsive intelligence. My teacher used to say, no human being is wiser than you are. It's just a matter of knowing where to look to receive that creative impulse more directly. It's already there. You're a radio that has as much access to the radio waves as any other, but you won't get hear the music unless you're tuned in right. As soon as you're tuned in right, woo! Such beauty.
Yeah, and you can really see when someone's tuned in, right? We can feel in ourselves when we're tuned in, right?
People know what that feels like. They just don't recognize perhaps what they're tuning into, or
Cover of that.
realize it's a universal intelligence. They say, well, I'm feeling better. Why are you feeling better? I don't know. Somebody said something nice to me. I don't know that they've tuned in to a channel that allows well-being and wisdom to naturally arise. It's not coming from outside.
This well-being, this wisdom, this love, it's all of these things, isn't it? It's not situational. It's not dependent on certain things. It's not something that comes to us from the outside. It's right here, absolutely all the time. And to just begin to look in that direction is so powerful, to test it, to play with that, to see what that looks like for us. I feel like I've been doing that over the last few years, and every time I find it there, every time I look, every time I quieten and become present, drop out of my thinking, use the feeling of contraction as a signal that I'm in my thinking and drop back down again, soften. Then
Wow, that's beautiful. I
there
want
it
everybody to know that, Rachel. Everybody. Because it's interesting to me right now, without that understanding, most adults, when they feel stress, tension, upset, feel like they have a problem, feel like they have an issue, feel like something isn't going well in their life, in their relationships, in their work. Most adults do more thinking when they're having difficulty or feel stressed. And that thinking perpetuates that stress because we can't think our way to well-being. It just creates, it's more trying an effort, which is just thinking that creates stress. And as people begin to catch on to their true nature, that we're connected to this well of being, this wellspring of love and creativity and wisdom, people begin to see the benefit of the instant you feel this way as an invitation to stop basically stop thinking about the problem, what to do about it, how to deal with it, because none of us can think our way to wisdom. Or we can't find wisdom in our computer mind, our conceptual mind. You don't go to a computer for love and wisdom. You go for all kinds of cool information. But you won't find answers. You won't find well-being. You won't find guidance in the computer. So more and more then, as soon as you feel tension and stress, immediately it's an invitation to come home, fall back into the now, and see how when you go in that direction, going toward source of well-being and love and wisdom, rather than looking out at the world and chronically, constantly thinking about it, dropping into this formless, quiet presence, being uplifted for free. I call it our drop-in center. You go to the drop-in center, it's open 24. It's
I like
open,
that.
It's open 24/7. There's no bouncer at the door. There is no door. It's open to anyone, anytime, ever. It's all-inclusive. It's all-embracing. And you go into this drop-in center and they serve refreshments that are nourishing, right? You feel better, which is nourishing and renewing. You feel lighter. You feel less burdened. And then for free, you also get guidance for how best to proceed at that moment. And I just did a course called Living from the Heart. In spiritual teaching, often they call that drop-in center our true heart. Our true nature is our heart, because it's full of creativity, beautiful feeling, and guidance. Full of it. That's our true heart. What I call the heart of the principles, when we talk about the three principles of thought, consciousness, mind. The heart of that is our true nature. We're not our egos. We're not our suffering. We're not our holding. That's part of who we are, but that's a teeny fraction of who we are.
So this moment of contraction being an invitation reminds me of how someone becoming very ill becomes a deep spiritual invitation.
Yes.
And it's not the journey that we think it is of having to go and get treatment and do this and work on ourselves. It's not that. It's this other invitation to spend more time resting in the nourishment of this drop-in center.
That be ye renewed in spirit.
To start to, often one of the things that I see when I'm working with people is them moving away from spending so much time in painful thinking, in harsh critical thinking. And there's this lovely courageous journey to start to listen to a more loving part of themselves, which
beautiful,
is so transformative, you know, which makes me wonder, is the medicine always love? You know, isn't that the medicine, the treatment, the healing, this journey back to love, to listening to that within us?
The real medicine is the one that heals our imagined wound. It's recovering our true nature. And it's very practical and very powerful. Rachel, a number of years back, out of the blue, I had a strangulated hernia, which one doctor described as the most painful thing a human being can experience. My intestine broke through the intestinal wall, and the muscle contracted and killed the intestine, strangulated. So by the time it was the most excruciating pain, it literally immediately I fell to the floor screaming, and I couldn't move. It was so pain. I could not move. It was so painful. Getting in the car was, it felt like the biggest ordeal. And by the time we got to the hospital, which was how far, 15 minutes drive, it was too late. And they operated immediately. And so they, anyways, long story short, I ended up having five operations in a period of a short period of time, all of which were major intestinal reconstruction kind of major operations. And at one point, they had to change my IV site. And so they had to try and find a vein they could get an IV needle into. And one nurse worked on it for a while and is putting the needle in and poking it around, poking it, moving it, and jabbing it in and out. And I'm just in excruciating pain again. And then she says, I can't do it. And she brought in a second nurse. She poked around, and then she goes, oh, that must have hurt. I hit a ligament or something. I don't know. Brought in the third nurse. She poked around, poked around, poked around.
Thank goodness.
That didn't work. They called in a fourth nurse, and I said, no more. I can't take it. And then, right at that moment, I don't know why, it was just because I've become more sensitive to my contraction is held thought. That even in the midst of that pain, psychologically, listen to what I was thinking and how every one of those thoughts was creating the corresponding feeling. I can't stand this. Now that thought is like in a movie. That thought creates that story and feeling in my being. Then this is going on forever. So now I'm in forever pain. So disheartening and discouraging to think your pain is forever. Then I went, this is horrible. Then I felt that, the burden of the contraction of that. Then I had the thought, this is torture. So I felt like I was being tortured. What does that make the nurse? And I just was having a constant flow of this kind of thinking. So I was consumed by my thinking. I was not at all present. My wife is sitting right next to me watching this happen, and she could see the degree of pain I was in. And I have a very high tolerance from pain. I don't complain. I can take a lot, but it was beyond my threshold. And all of a sudden, when I realized, look at how I'm thinking up this contraction. And it threw me into the present moment. No technique, no effort. Now I'm fully present and I'm back in the room. Literally, I'm back in the room. This is what I noticed. I looked out the window and there's the most beautiful scene of trees, no buildings, no nothing, just trees blowing in the wind, and I experienced beauty. And then I looked up and I saw the clock, and it was just a neutral feeling. And then I looked at my wife's face and I saw her compassion for my pain, and I felt incredible love. Then I noticed the way the nurse was holding my arm and hand so tenderly. And immediately out of my mouth, I s said to the nurse, who a minute before was my torturer, I said to my nurse, it just came out, I can't thank you enough for how tender you're being with me. I know this must be difficult for you. And I appreciate you're doing the best you can to try and make it work. And I'm sorry it's not. And then my wife pointed out to me later that I kept falling fully present and just saying something kind. And then I experienced pain, but it was in the midst of beauty, neutrality, love, compassion, pain, just part of a bigger picture. But it was no longer who I was. I was no longer the torturee of this experience. I was wide awake in the moment, experiencing not just what I was thinking about, but experiencing everything. Rachel, I tell you, this insight was one of the biggest insights I had. I woke up that night at 2 in the morning with incredible realizations about how when I'm in pain, the pain is real, but how often I can add to it and complicate it. My wife says when you have a cold, you really have the man flu because you keep focusing on it, thinking about it, and talking about how bad you feel. And I started seeing all these ways in which I would innocently create stories when I wasn't feeling well physically. And it's changed my relationship to going through illness. And I've seen people going through cancer who are living in love, beauty, gratitude, aliveness, and some pain. And it's changed their journey. And it's been surprising how, at a higher level of consciousness, it's not the same world seen different. It's a different world. It's a completely different world. So that's the story that is one of the stories in terms of the connection between we're always in our experience of life and how variable that is, no matter what we're going through on the outside. It's a huge variable. Two different people go through the same painful situation. They have completely different experiences. And that's the hope, is that well-being and wisdom are always available to us, no matter what we're going through. And it improves the quality of life, period.
That's beautiful. What an amazing experience.
It was, to this day, it still has repercussions.
And the thing is, we wouldn't willingly go and ask for an experience like that, would we? You know, it's
No,
not
and that
knocking on the
physical
door of
pain is
life.
physical pain, and we're not saying it doesn't exist. We're not denying it, but we're saying our experience is a variable. Our nature is to be able to access well-being as we go through any experience that we have in life.
And I think for anyone listening to this who is in pain at the moment and thinking, well, I'm not in a high level of thinking and I am experiencing it as difficult.
Yes.
One of the things I would say is to the first place to go to is to have compassion and love for yourself, feeling as you are, exactly as you are.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with feeling that. Nothing wrong with being caught up in and believing these thoughts. That happens to all of us. There's plenty of times when I'm caught up in my thinking and it seems true. Right? So it's not wrong or bad ever. That's ego's judgment interpretation. It shouldn't be the way it is. It is really ego's battle cry.
And the
You
moment we
shouldn't.
see through that is the moment that we've come back to love, isn't it? You know, the moment
Exactly.
See the harshness of that thought is the moment that we've actually already stepped back into the drop-in center. We're already on our way back there.
Yes.
And we can just settle back and let that happen and let love take over again.
It's powerful to think no matter what your problem, if you come back to this quiet, not knowing, feeling alive connection space, you'll know exactly how to deal with what's happening. That's what I tried to teach my kids when they were learning this, when I first came across this understanding called the three principles. And actually, when I first met Sid Banks and I met someone who looked at life very differently than I did, that my daughter was turning 14, my son was 9. And as they began to get a sense of we can think, we can create stories, we can make up stuff, we can hold on to those thoughts and stories and suffer. So there's no real gain in holding on to any of the thinking that weighs on us or burdens us. As they started catching on to that, I was thrilled because I saw them spending less time burdened by their thinking, more resilient. And I said to my daughter when she was 16, she was so resilient. Unbelievable how her life changed. Her body changed, her voice changed, her eyes changed, her posture changed. Every one of our friends said, "My God, what happened to Nina?" And so I told her, I said, "Before you leave home, I want you to know two things, and you already are really seeing how it's thought that creates our experience, and holding thought is the one problem. My God, you're teaching me now. You're an inspiration. Your resilience is an inspiration to all of us in our family and to your friends." And I said, "The other thing I want you to know, the second thing is that when you do fall out of thinking and you're not holding on to it, that there is this quiet, beautiful feeling of presence that's always there, a feeling of well-being. And that when you're in a quiet mind, and the feeling of presence, without doing anything, you have all the common sense you need to deal with anything that comes your way in life. I want you to have more and more faith and trust that you don't have to know with your head, that your heart knows." So then you could say, "Well, love is always the answer." Because when you come back to that feeling, you fill up with well-being and knowing that will guide you through anything, no matter what it is. A stage 4 diagnosis of cancer, it'll help you go through that, not from your ego's view of life, but from wisdom's love of gratitude, appreciation, guidance, view of life.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that cool? Two things you need to know. It was interesting because Sid Banks had two major insights that transformed his life. The first is holding thought is the source of all suffering. And his second insight was you go beyond all thinking, and there's this drop-in center that's universal and full of love and wisdom and knowing and available to everybody. And so how simple can that be, huh? Two things, that's all you need to know to live a absolutely beautiful, beautiful life, no matter what comes your way.
I think it helps though, to have these examples of that in action. I remember some years ago listening to you, I don't know whether it was on a podcast or a teaching session that you were doing, and you talked about something that has stayed with me and helped me in so many situations. And it was a situation where a family that you knew rang you up in distress, saying that they were about to be evicted and they needed to come and live with you, and they were going to be there within 24 hours. And
Yes.
you said, okay, leave it with me, let me think about this and I'll come back to you. And what you did was really interesting to me, because I felt the panic of that situation as I heard. I was like, oh my God, what would you do? You know? And I remember thinking, well, I think I would spend the next 24 hours worrying. And what you did was you went and played.
That was definitely my MO
That was an option.
Before knowing this. So, yeah.
What you did was you went and played with the children in the garden for 2 or 3 hours and just you knew that you needed to get into a more relaxed state of mind. And then certain names dropped in, you called certain people, and within a few hours, the whole situation was resolved for that family. And what I loved about that was that you took care of your own connection. You know, you settled in, you knew what you needed to get back to your wisdom and your inner quiet and your playfulness and your relaxation and your ease, all those good things, all those beautiful feelings. And then from there, the answers just came. The answers to a situation you had never been faced with before, that you had no pre-scripted answers to, that there wasn't, you know, a schedule of this is what you do when this situation arises. And it's that it stayed with me, the power of that. And there's been occasions since where I found myself thinking that I need to worry about something and go and think up the answer. And then I've had that story come back to me and thought, yeah, maybe that's not my best response here. Maybe there's somewhere else that I can go in my being that is so much more relaxed that will yield a much better solution.
Better solutions. It's the reason it's called wisdom is that the answer always lies in wisdom rather than in analysis. There's nothing wrong with analysis, and it has its place because it can help you look at things from different views and with different information, but that's not the same as wisdom. I was just before talking to you, I was talking to a friend of mine, Michael Neal, and we were talking about when we touch this deeper space and knowing, often there's an explosion of completely new and fresh. And you could say that's a miracle, that you could think something is impossible or difficult or there's no solution. You come back to this feeling, place of not knowing and deeper feeling, and suddenly there's a transformative shift in consciousness. And on the one hand, the miracle seems extraordinary. On the other hand, it's really quite ordinary. When Sid had his enlightenment experience, Sid Banks, the sort of someone who discovered the deeper nature of all of us, he said it was really quite ordinary. I just went beyond the limitations of my conceptual mind into this deep, deep quiet and deep feeling of connection. And then things became evident. Oh, I could do this. Things you've never thought of, things you couldn't have imagined because you had never thought it before. And the fact that we can access completely original thought, thought that comes from the origin of life, not from stored information, that we can literally access original thought in any situation if we know where to look. So Sid would say, it's all thought. Wake up to the holding. Wake up out of the holding. And then listen. Listening is a metaphor for being fully present because you can't think and listen at the same time. Listen for a feeling. this uplifting feeling, a love that embraces peace, joy, happiness, love, compassion, embraces all of that, is the foundation of all of that. In that feeling, there, Sid would say over and over again, in that feeling is a knowing that's not of this world. It's wisdom. It's before it hits the intellect and gets limited. The complete universal potential taking form as something completely new and fresh. So Sid would say, quiet your mind down, find a nice feeling, be open to new and fresh. Stop holding on to the old. You won't find your answer in the old. Let it go. Come back. Be present. Relax. You don't have to know with your head what to do. I rarely know how to deal with anything anymore, but I trust I don't have to think about anything to get guidance or to make a decision. That's so, this is new, Rich, was I don't have to do any thinking to make wise decisions. It saves me a ton of thinking. Ton of thinking. It's easier.
Well, that feels like a beautiful place to land.
You are delightful, Rachel. Thank you for this conversation.
Oh, thank you, Dickon. It's been lovely to explore this terrain with you again.
Yeah, it sure is. Never gets tiring, does it?
Always fresh.
Yeah.
So, if people wanted to connect with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, my answer has changed about that. I used to say, go to my website. Now it's, well, I have a YouTube channel where I keep talking about how you can look inside yourself and find everything you're looking for. So I have a lot of talks that point people in that direction. My talks aren't important. When I am saying not important, I keep inviting you to look in the direction where you can see what you and I have been talking about. And the other way you can connect with me is through my email, dickon.bettinger@gmail.com.
Okay.
I have a website, Three Principles Mentoring, but less and less am I using that.
Well, I can put all of that in the show notes and people can take their pick as to how they find their way to you.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you for being here.
It's been great, Rachel. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you've enjoyed it and found it helpful. To find out more about today's speaker, please look in the show notes. If you want to know more about the work I do or connect with me further, then you'll find me at rachelsingleton.com. If you would like to leave feedback or a review for the show on your podcast platform, that would be wonderful and will help me spread the word. For now, thank you again, and I wish you a lovely day.